The question is what is the importance of Musser? Is Musser just to be a good boy and or to how to relate to people? You understand? Just to be intelligent, a chacham? I think there's something more there, okay? More direct relationship to God, okay? There is, we're supposed to trust in God. And in Mishlei it says that don't rely on your mind, just trust in God. And now that's definitely a contradiction to Mishlei, because all of Mishlei is Chochmah, that you should trust in your mind, that you should live by your mind. And here it says don't trust in your mind and rely on God. Okay? So what Mishlei is saying is that if you really look at life, the question is how much is really in your hands? In other words, you have intention to come to yeshiva and your car dies. You know what I mean? That's out of your hands. I mean you could have a disease and you don't even realize it, then show up. That's it. And, you know what I mean? Like anything, there's so many things that, in other words, all you could do is make a decision. After that, you try to carry it out, but the results are not in your hands. Okay? Now, let's say I don't investigate life this way. You understand? And I didn't think of this idea. So then I think everything is in my hands. So why am I trusting in God? In other words, a person that becomes religious without investigating reality, then they must live a life of contradiction. Because on one hand, they feel everything is in their hands and they have to control everything. And anything that goes wrong is my fault. And I have to take care of everything. And then they turn to God and they say, God, please help me. What are you asking God for? You think you're in control. In other words, you turn to God, and there's no, and the truth is, you're really caught in a contradiction. So therefore, if you don't really recognize, if you don't really stop to think about in everyday life how much is not in your control, so then there's no reason to turn to God. In other words, then you can't say like Shlomo HaMelech said that trust totally in God, don't trust in your mind. What does that mean? It means that first I have to recognize that I don't have much control. Basically, my biggest control is free will to make a decision. If that God guarantees that he doesn't interfere in that. But after that, I mean, so you could make the right decision and try to do it. You're obligated to try to work it out to the best that you can. But there's so many outside factors that you can't plan for that you really have to recognize that it's not in your hands. Okay? So if you're religious without this idea, then you're really caught in a contradiction, because what are you relying on God for? The second one is that you should give the tzedakah, you should give money, you should do for others. Okay? Now, a lot of people feel that I'm giving my money, I work hard, but I'm a religious person, and so I'm giving it to God. You see, that's also a mistake. You see, what's the mistake? Because ownership is only a legal thing. Fits into legal category. Because for civilization to operate, so we have to have ownership. But philosophically, there's no such thing as ownership. Okay? Paro had that experiment. He experimented. He wanted to take everything with him. So he took his slaves, he took his money, all into the pyramids with him after he died. And today we look at his body, and he doesn't seem to have helped him much. You understand? We have the body, doesn't seem to have helped him much. So you see that ownership really doesn't work. You only have usage. Philosophically, you only have usage. But emotionally, we feel ownership. And there has to be a change from that feeling of ownership that you really don't own anything. You only have usage. Today you have it, tomorrow you don't. Even the ownership, there's no real security that you have it. I mean, I mean, you thought you had a lot of money until gas prices went up. Okay? Then suddenly you don't have the money. So the thing is, there's no real ownership. There's only usage. Once you realize there's usage, that it's only usage, I don't own it, so then you could turn to God. Then you could give your money to God. Whatever God says is the right thing. I'm only using it. God wants me to use it this way. Fine. It's not my money anyway. It's not ownership. It's only usage. While I'm alive, I use it. You see, that's a very hard, difficult thing to turn to. But again, if you don't have that idea, which is a Musar idea, then when you give tzedakah, it's really the wrong idea. You think you're a nice guy. I'm willing to give up of what I own. I'm willing to give up. You see, that's the wrong idea of tzedakah. So the thing is what I'm saying is that you cannot really truly relate to God without Musar. Okay, Musar is simply you don't need much facts for Musar. Musar is for beginners. If you're 15 years old, you probably have all the facts. It's just experiences in life. All we do is change. All Musar does is change your view of how to look at your life without any facts, just the facts of living. We just change your view. But if you have the incorrect view of life, then that means that you can't have a real relationship with God. In other words, Musar is your view of life that you have from childhood on till you're around 15. Okay? Now you have your choice. You can change that view through the study of Musar, or you can keep that view the rest of your life. Musar is changing your view from a false view to a true view. Okay? To a true view of reality. Okay? Many of the Avos, many of the biblical heroes were punished by God. From what I could think of, everyone was punished because they did something wrong against God. Like, for instance, Cain, he didn't bring the best of his fruits to God, except one. One was Yaakov. Yaakov, his mistake was, what was his mistake? He bought a wrong coat. He bought the wrong suit for his son. That was his mistake. It had nothing to do with God. He made a mistake. He bought the wrong suit for his child. Okay? So what was his punishment? His punishment that he was separated from his child for 22 years. And that's bad enough. But the only thing is, because he got depressed, he couldn't have prophecy. He couldn't have nevuah. Now, nevuah doesn't mean only telling the future. It's a certain level of learning. So because of this one mistake, that he bought the wrong coat for his child, he lost out on 22 years of metaphysical knowledge of a level through prophecy, which now he didn't have. I'm sure he studied and he learned, but it was without prophecy. Okay? So the thing is, because he made this slight mistake with his child, which had nothing to do with God, God gave him a punishment. The punishment wasn't that he didn't get nevuah, but the effect of the punishment was that he did not get nevuah for 22 years. And God knew he would lose out on all that metaphysical knowledge. But yet God held that it is better to undo a defect of the soul than to have 22 years of this metaphysical knowledge. Okay? I'm just showing you from the pasuk that Musar is a direct relationship to God. In other words, you see here that you must have an introduction with Musar before you get into philosophy. I'm not saying you can't learn philosophy, but Musar must come first. In other words, let me put it this way, the system of Torah. System of Torah is that, first I accept that God gave the Torah on Mount Sinai. And if that is true, then the first thing I must do is keep halacha and train the mind. Training of the mind must come first, because I must think correctly even about Musar. So the first thing is, the most important thing in the beginning is the learning of Gemara and halacha. And for two purposes. One is to train the mind to think correctly, and two is to obey God to keep halacha. Even if I don't know the reasons, God says to make a sukkah, I don't ask him why, I ask him what are the dimensions. Okay? That is the first thing. But once I get into, you know, that's the nasa. The nishma is philosophy. The introduction to philosophy of God must come through Musa. And that we see from that if you start with God without Musa, there are two mistakes. There's two things. One is that it's not a real relationship. You're going to miss out on your relationship to God because emotionally you're different. That was the first example. We see that God wants this, but there's another big problem. If you don't know who you really are, if you don't know your motives, then when you learn about God, then that knowledge must fit in to your infantile framework of the childish framework, because you don't know who you are. You think you're relating to God. You work only with the mind, and you don't deal with your emotions, and you don't deal with the unconscious part of you that they're totally unaware of, okay? And that is the area of that's really where the Yetzer Hara is. That's the evil inclination, okay? And therefore, if you don't know that part, it's the framework in which you learn about God will be, you could have the most abstract knowledge of the word of God, but yet the framework in which you're relating it to is that infantile view of life, the unconscious. And therefore, I hold that that the basis of all the philosophy, after halacha, the basis of all philosophy must be Musar. There are four components in Musar, okay? There are four components in Musar. One is to measure, when you make an act, to measure the immediate versus the consequences. You have a certain desire to do something, or you have a certain fear, you don't want to do something. So you have to evaluate those emotions versus the consequences. That's one part of Musa. And so therefore, if you make a mistake in this evaluation, then the cause of the mistake is usually in psychology. That's after you've, okay? So it's after you train your mind. One of them is training your mind. Part of Musa is you must have your mind trained before you can work on Musa, because you must think correctly. So that's two. Really, training the mind, which should be done in halacha, which should come first, before Musa. And then there's the evaluation. Then if you make a mistake in the evaluation, you see there are bad consequences, and you see it's the result of your mistake. So then you have to go. Then you have to study psychology to know the emotions that caused it. And the last one is a strategy of life. You should always have a plan. Not goal-oriented. It's even there. People are planning out their lives when really they're goal-oriented. It's not a plan. It's desire for a goal, because you can't live without a goal. You could live without a goal, but you can't live without a plan. You understand? In other words, there is a goal in life. Let's put it this way. There's a practical goal and impractical goals. Okay, one is a person is goal-oriented. That's very. They can't operate without a goal. In other words, if they take a vacation, they have to have a goal. I'm going to do all these things. Really, when you should take a vacation, you shouldn't have any goals. On the contrary, it's time to take a vacation from goals. You understand? So the thing is, there's a time where there's no goals. You just do what you feel like as long as there's no consequences. Okay? But however, in life, you have to know you're going to make a living. Well, how am I going to make a living? So then you have to have a goal. Okay? So therefore, you need a strategy for practical goals. So there again, you need Musa in itself. You understand? Because you have to know if you're goal-oriented, that could be dangerous. You can make many mistakes by being goal-oriented. You understand? On the other hand, if you have practical goals, so then you need practical goals. And therefore, if you have a goal, then you need a strategy. So you must have a strategy of in different areas of life. By goal-oriented, I mean that, let's say, for instance, you're sitting by yourself quietly. Could you sit down and do nothing and just relax and do nothing. Most people, as soon as they start sitting, they get the jitters. They can't sit. They have to be doing something. They have to accomplish something. They're not accomplishing something. They feel like they're evil, like there's something wrong. Well, what if there's nothing to accomplish? Let's say, for instance, I have a certain amount of energy that I could put into learning, but then I need a break. Now, when I take the break, do I have to have a goal? Or do I just say, well, what am I in the mood for? Well, I think I just feel like sitting down and doing nothing. Can you do that? Most people can't. Most people can't relax. There are many reasons for that. One is their superego is hurt. Like, I'm not accomplishing something. I have to accomplish something. That's one thing. Two is, you might start associating without realizing it, and you have to face your unconscious. That's pain. You know what I mean? That's the greatest pain you could have. So you just can't tolerate that. So the thing is that people can't relax. They just can't relax. There's sometimes you have to do something, fine, but you can't. But could you relax? Most people can't. They have to have a goal, so they go play sports. What is sports? Another goal. I have to win. You understand? Well, I play video games. So I play against myself to win. Everything has to be a goal. And what is winning? Competition. What is competition? I evaluate myself. If I somehow win this video game, somehow I'm something special. I don't know how, but I never figured that out yet. But emotionally, I feel I'm something special. You ever see sometimes two guys are cutting each other down? You notice they're not angry, but each one has to get the last word in. Why? It's a matter of winning. If I don't win, somehow there's something wrong with me. I mean, like it's a catastrophe. I lost. You understand? People are constantly has to evaluate themselves for success. They just can't sit back and relax. You understand? That's goal-oriented. That's the problem with goal-oriented. But a practical goal, you have to make a living. You understand? Even by learning. And say that you're preparing for shiur or something, there's a certain goal. But let's say you sit down at night and you want to learn. You ever just say, let me go through the library and whatever my eyes pick out, that's what I'm going to learn now. Just what I feel like. What do I feel like learning now? There's something I'm just going to learn right now, get one idea, close the book, and walk away. Could you do that? Or no, it has to be a goal. I'm going to do this book. And then when I finish this book, then I'm going to get the next book. What's the matter with just one idea? There's a machlokas about a siyum. One person holds that a siyum is every time you finish an idea. He liked parties, by the way. But the thing is that every time you finish an idea... you understand? Just an idea. So you open up a book, get one idea, and goodbye. That's it. So I don't read the book. It was worth it, all the money for the book for that one idea. That's it. But if you go goal-oriented, you can't do that. You can't sit down even and enjoy learning. It has to be a goal. Just one side point. There are many Tosfos, many Rashbos, that are much more abstract than any Pasuk in Mishlei. How is it possible that the Rishonim are more abstract than King Solomon? It's impossible. The answer is the subject matter of Musar is the least abstract of all the studies in Torah. The difficulty is, of course, you have to deal directly with your emotions, contrary to your emotions. You understand? That's the difficulty. You know, I was teaching a couple of days ago. So a girl said to me, she says, you know, you're one of the happiest pessimists I ever met. You know what I mean? So the answer is, what's the answer? Because, see, I'm telling her every aspect of her life is wrong because she has a certain view of life. And I'm telling her every view of life is wrong. So I look like a pessimist, you see? But the truth is, we really out to enjoy life. We want the best enjoyment, but The best example I could give is like this. Let's say, for instance, this girl was planning for a sweet 16 for 3 months, okay? And right before she walked in, she got a stain on her dress. You understand? One catastrophe, and that ends it. So the girl says, yeah, that could be, but you could overcome it. I said, okay, I'll give you another example, okay? I said, just before you walk in, your boyfriend broke up with you. Oh, there, that was it. Okay? But the thing is, what I'm trying to say, you cannot enjoy life when you have conflicts or you do actions that bring to consequences. You can't. So the only way you can enjoy life is to avoid the consequences. So you have to start by avoiding the consequences so you can enjoy life. You understand? So therefore, what we're asking of you is to look at every aspect of your life, and most of them you have a wrong view. So it looks pessimistic, but the truth is that's the only way to get to really enjoy life. You understand? All right. The question is that it says we have to emulate God. We have to imitate God, and just like he's the Racham, we should be a Racham. So it seems to be that the personality should come after your knowledge of God. Okay? After your knowledge of God. Okay. The answer is that there are, let's take chesed, kindness, okay? There is two reasons why I should keep kindness. One reason is the Rambam says that when you get through with the Mora Nevuchim, then you could truly love God. I mean, then you could truly love people. I'm sorry. You could truly love people. In other words, because of my relationship to God, that I want to be in line with God's will, so then God's will is that I should do justice and kindness to people. Okay? So what about me? So that means, where is my kindness? When are we going to finish the Mora Nevuchim? You know what I mean? So the thing is that for us, kindness has a different motive. Okay? Our motive is, let's say, for instance, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, we're supposed to have guests. So most people invite their friends or family, right? But it seems halachically you're supposed to invite somebody from the Bowery, right? So you can imagine at the Shabbos table you have this guy that smells a little bit and can't afford to be dressed. And this is the guy that's sitting at the Shabbos and Yom Tov table. This is the chesed, right? Chesed doesn't always fit in with your emotions. You know, sometimes you have to do things that real kindness, you have to give up of yourself. You see? Now that runs against my emotions. When it runs against my emotions, so then the emotion shows itself. I'm in conflict. When you're in conflict, that's what you could deal with. In other words, you see, when God wanted to cure Yaakov, what did he do? He separated Yosef, the thing that caused him to make mistakes, he separated from him. So now he's in conflict. When he's in conflict, the tzaddik knows how to deal with conflict. He does a search and tries to undo the conflict. So for the lower level of chesed, in other words, you have to be very careful. People read the Torah, and the Torah might be talking to a person on a very high level, and then because they don't know their emotions, they assume they're there. That's what we were saying before. You assume you're there, and then you do it. But you must operate it by your motives. You have to be operated by your needs. And your needs is to undo your incorrect view of life and the cause of that incorrect view, namely your emotions. You see? So either you do it on the logical level. If you can't work it out on the logical level, then you got to go down to the emotional level. So chesed, many times real chesed, runs contrary to your emotions. So the chesed of Mishle is different than the chesed of the Mora Nevuchim. It's two worlds apart, giant steps apart. You understand? If you're working on that level, you'll get there in 100 years. You're talking about the Rambam's level. I mean, I'm not saying people can't make it today, but I mean it's a long way away. You have to work on your level. Musa level is chesed benefits me. Then it's going to run against, sometimes real chesed runs against my emotions. Let me clarify, okay? The chesed In other words, like this. Like before I said, Musar is where I just look at life. I don't have to have much knowledge, but I just have to have a true view of the way I'm living, okay? So I look at Chesed as a social, basically, the emotions look at Chesed as a social thing. Kindness, you know, I have over people, my friends and family I work for, some guy I don't know, maybe I'll give him a couple bucks and that's it, you know what I mean? Clear my conscience, that's all. Only, in other words, I do what the society demands or what my guilt demands. Wherever I feel guilt, so then I'll do Chesed. Wherever I don't, then I could avoid it. Okay? That's the social view of Chesed. Okay? But real Chesed is I have to evaluate, right? That's what we said one of the things of Musa is I have to evaluate the needs of different people. Okay? Now, let's say I evaluate somebody needs Chesed, that the type of thing that it demands of me, I really hate doing. Let's say, for instance, the yeshiva suddenly needs money, and the only way is for yeshiva guys to go out and collect money. Not everybody could do that. So there's going to be a chesed where I have to go against my personality. You understand? Now, so simple, if I just learn halacha, not philosophy. So I have to do chesed, and I learn that this is chesed, okay? Now, when I do that chesed, I'm going to be in terrible conflict. I'm going to feel very uncomfortable. Now, as soon as I feel uncomfortable, if you learn Musa, you immediately start investigating. You start investigating, what is that, why am I feeling uncomfortable? What is this discomfort from? You understand? So, the thing is that you start investigating the emotions. So, practically, you start investigating the emotions without knowledge of God. Before you get, I have knowledge of Torah. I have understanding. I might know, understand the ideas of God because I learned the Chumash. I learned Tanakh. I learned Chazal. They tell me ideas about God. But before I really continue investigating, my main effort has to, I'm not saying you shouldn't learn about God. I'm just saying you have a Seder. Let's say, for instance, the main Seder for you, like I said, should be Gemara and Halacha. That's the basis of the Torah. Without that, you're not really even relating to God. There's nothing. You understand? Then comes Musa. That doesn't mean when you learn the Parsha Shavuot, you should close your eyes about God. I'm saying you should learn about God, but you should have a real Seder in Musa. It should be a certain amount of time, a half hour a day. You don't need a lot, a half hour, an hour a day. 45, whatever it is. But the main thing of your life now is should be learning to Gemara and Halacha. That's the essence. Musa is this, once you have that knowledge, then Musa is through, it's a lifetime job anyway, so you have plenty of time. Don't rush it. You understand? But the thing is that the essence, because the essence is Halacha, I'm just saying that the emphasis should not be on the philosophy of God. That can't come first. But the thing is, even without God, before you come to the Yemara Nevuchim, and that, there is a benefit for Chesed. By the way, I want to clarify another step. In mitzvos, when we give reasons for mitzvos, unless God gives us through prophecy in some place in Torah what the reason for the mitzvah is, we don't know any of the reasons. All we could say is that there's a benefit of the mitzvah. Now, when you look for purposes of the mitzvah, somebody will give you a purpose that has to do with the guy that's on the level of the Rambam. You could. I mean, you could work it out, different ideas. But that's not going to benefit you. All the mitzvahs, there's a benefit, because if you try to keep all the mitzvahs, many of them cause conflicts. You understand? So for our level, the purpose of many of the mitzvos is because it helps me deal with my emotions. I have to relate to the mitzvos on my level. If my level is the Musa level, then I have to see where I have conflicts with different mitzvos. There's certain mitzvos that might bother me. You understand? I one time went to Howard Johnson's to get ice cream with a Baal Tshuva. So he says, Rebbe, you don't know what you're missing. The cheeseburger here is the best in the world. Right? Now, I didn't experience it, so it's not a big deal. But for this guy, he's experiencing it. He's missing out. He has a conflict. keeping halacha caused them a conflict. You understand? In other words, the question is like this. The question is, in general, in Musar, when Mishlei writes that if you do this act or have this emotion, it's going to lead to a certain consequence, it seems to be 100%, right? So what happens is that when you start looking at life, you see it's not 100%. So you only see that it's that when he says 100%, it means that it's highly probable. Like, for instance, when you decide to come to the yeshiva, one problem is the car might die. The other problem is when you get here, suddenly for some reason your mind starts wandering and you can't learn. All your intentions were good. But whether you can make it or not, there's different factors that come up. You understand? So the fact that you decided to come to the yeshiva, whether you can actually accomplish it, is a high probability. Okay? So most of life is a high probability. So this is one of the problems that I encountered when I started learning Mishlei. I had this problem, and then it took time until I worked it out. So I'm telling you this, that's what saved you time. That's different between a Rebbe and we're a person that's working it out on his own. So you have your choice. If you have a Rebbe that could teach you, so fine. If not, you're going to have to start from scratch. Okay? The question is the idea of usage of money and not ownership, do you have to have knowledge of God of that, or could you have it just from the laws of nature, just from looking at the physical life? If you look at the physical life, you see that's what I said, that Paro was the experiment. He had a pride of ownership, and he took his slaves, and he took his gold, and he took his money, he took his wives, and they were all buried with him. You understand? Now, when we look at his body, I mean, it didn't help him anything, all this pride of ownership. So I'm saying, just if you look at life, that you could look at life and see that pride of ownership is not practical. It just doesn't work. You understand? It's just not there. Then when you study about God, then it becomes very simple to rely on God, because you realize everything is usage. So God says, give me the money. Okay, that's my usage now, my relationship to God. But first you have to have the Musa view of it to know the real relationship with God. It's not your money that you're giving to God. It's really God's money. How do I know? Because God has the ownership, not me. I only have usage. So it's his money, so he could tell me what to do with it. He tells me, he says, 90% you could enjoy, 10% you got to give to tzedakah. So that's it. So 10%, that's what he tells me to do. It's not my money anyway. It's his money.